If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It's a Tuesday, so we have that motoring feature with Bogiso Dibakwana, who's in studio with us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to all the listeners. It's been a long time.
I do want to ask everybody listening, if they've observed. So we all love convenience, ne? I'm one of those people. It's lovely. You have those apps, 60 minutes, is it 60 minutes?
Yeah.
60-60. Everybody has something quirky, right?
Yeah.
And
delivery
it's, yeah, it's wonderful. And you don't have to lift a finger. You don't have to go anywhere. Things just arrive. Mm-hmm. However, what I see on the roads with those bikes, I have to ask, do these people have license? What is going on? What? So, one of the things I've seen, and this is now obviously generalizing, so pardon me. They don't know how to stop and start at the traffic light. No. Mothating wants to keep it moving as long as possible because he doesn't know how to start it again. So part of the problem is that if the light is red,
they keep on moving.
They want to keep the thing going because if it stops, there's a crisis.
Yeah.
What is going on?
I think when that happens, you basically would notice that this person is a learner driver, just got introduced into biking because I mean, when you get into a stop street, you clutch, put in first gear, and then hold on to your rear wheel with your foot brake. That's what you should do, so that also when you let go of the clutch, you need to make sure that there's no car that is trying to cut the robot, because that's one of the accidents that happens.
But there's also the thing about, I don't know, the corners. Bawa man. There's a balancing problem. In fact, it's balancing.
I think they underestimate the fact that a 150 and a 250, it's two different things. So sometimes you get people who had gotten their licenses on a bigger bike, so with a bigger tire at the rear. So once you have a 150 or 250, it has a lower and a smaller profile at the rear. And obviously somebody has been watching SBK on the weekend and they feel that they want to be, you know, your Brad Bender on a Monday. So that comes with the problem.
Okay. So then, you know, what's the suggestion? What's the intervention with all of these problems?
Well, look, I think that's what SAMTA is trying to do, and to help in navigating all these challenges that we've been seeing on the road. We have Teboho on the line to actually give us more details into that.
Teboho Chita, who is a managing director at the South African Motorbike Transport Association, SAMTA, that Bogiso has been speaking about. Teboho, thanks again for making time for us. Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Point of View. All right, let's make sure that. Thank you very much. Talk to us about your intervention. As I said, I'm sure everybody has seen that. Look, we love the convenience. We love the fact that, you know, the economy is kind of going with this, but it just feels like a hazard on the road. People don't seem safe. So, what's your intervention?
It does sometimes feel like a hazard. We are trying by all means to work hand in hand with government in terms of regulating. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It does feel like a hazard from time to time, especially when you see how they turn the corners. I heard you mentioning, and bateka from time to time.
Yes.
But we are trying by all means to work hand in hand with government in terms of regulating and also making sure that they are licensed. The biggest thing that I think we've come across as well as an association is that it's allowed, you know, it's not, I don't know how to put it, but it's allowed that they can be on the road just with learner's licenses and not a driver's license, unlike a car, or a vehicle. So that is where we come in to try and regulate that aspect, where we are saying with government, with everything that we have in our power, we can now say, guys, we are here to be conduits. We are here to be vessels to unite and foster a proper way of functioning as road users under that umbrella, you know.
So tell me, so in other words, they write the learner's test and literally it's possible and okay for them to go on the road without the license.
That's what we realized, yes.
Remember that your learner's license, according to K53, if you're 16 years old, you are allowed to have a biking license, a motorcycle license, especially a 150 powered license.
I had no idea.
Which is mostly the bikes that are used for deliveries.
Yes, for delivery, 150cc.
Yes.
That's
true. So people
can go on the road with just the learner's license.
I can hear the fear in your voice.
I call
these vacational jobs. Actually, these jobs can help in terms of youth and also.
Yes,
holiday.
It's fine, but people must have a license. Yeah.
People should have a license, and the industry partners that we have are ones that make sure that people are regulated, that they have licenses that have gone through the proper training, as well as business mentorship as well. You know, you can't run something like this, but because you must remember, whenever they get into these platforms, they also get in as independent contractors. So no one is going to follow you around about your hours. No one is going to say, hey, you need to pay this, you've got bills to pay. It's up to you the hours that you make and how long you
It's a
work.
Very important point you make, because in the trucking industry, they're regulated in terms of how many hours you can have someone on the road. People get tired. That is why the enforcement of the fact that you must have, I think it's a support driver or something like that. Because if you are just allowed to be on the road, and I get it, I get people need to make a buck for as long as you want to. You know, who regulates how many hours you are spending on the road? Because it is unsafe.
No, true. It is unsafe. I think I don't know about here at home, but I've noticed that in other countries that an Uber app won't allow you to log in if you have worked a certain
number of hours.
Yeah. So, as she says, you know, Stebogo says some of the biggest problems is that no one regulates that here at home. These apps, you are able to log in. You can practically log in from 6 in the morning until 6 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just doing all your deliveries, because people are now trying to make money.
So Tebogo, no, I'm really uncomfortable with the fact that people are on the road without a license. What can be done immediately about that? I know that you guys are assisting with training and all of that, but people need to stop being on the road without a license.
to break it down as best as I can, riding a motorbike, especially one of 150 cc's, is not that difficult. So we are working hand in hand, like I said, with the government to try and regulate as best as possible, but also not take food out of people's mouths. That's definitely not what we want to do as SAMHSA. But we also want to say, here we are. We are going to try and assist you to get the proper training, to get the proper licensing, so that you can continue working. You know, that's why we are here. That's why we're doing what we're doing. Because at the end of the day, like you said, this is a program, or what is happening should be assisting the youth. So, not everyone can afford varsity and college and this and the other, but this is a skill that you can learn and acquire and make money out of it.
But and I get that. Here's the problem here. If I've already started working and I'm busy making money, what are the chances that I'm going to make it a priority to get a license if I can just continue to trade? So it's one of those. It's a catch-22. So, you don't want people to stop working, but there needs to be a limit to what we can allow on the road, because if it were me, if I can work without a license and I just carry on with my learners until for
years,
a year, exactly, until it expires, why would I want to do anything about it?
Yeah.
So many of them do actually want, the ones that we have had as members or that we are getting as members, because membership grows on a daily, they do want to have the right papers, so to speak. They want to be regulated, because it's not nice being stopped by traffic, and every day you must cook a story and hear my papers and this, that, and the other. So there are ones that are approaching us, and I believe that as SAMHSA grows, we will be able to then work with the traffic departments and all of that to regulate as much as possible in terms of making sure that everybody has the right licensing and papers.
So what kind of support are you giving? In other words, do they get to learn how to ride without the costs? Do you subsidize those costs?
As part of the membership, we subsidize, but also there is a fee that you will pay if you do not have the correct training, because it is quite a vigorous process. You know, we need to understand that you know what you're doing. It's not like riding a bike. Yes, it is 150 cc's, but still, you need to be aware of the regulations on the road and this, that, and the other. So we do put you through enough training so that you are aware that you're on the road and you need to use the road accordingly and understand what that is about.
If I'm coming there, what are the app suppliers saying? I mean, you have a lot of these app. Are you getting support from them? And how do they regulate? Because if they can put people on with just the learner's license, what are they helping you guys with?
Without putting my foot in my mouth.
I was going to say, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't want to speak on their behalf.
Yeah, no,
they are our partners at the end of the day. Mm. So, yeah, I really don't want to speak on their behalf and say what are they saying and how are they going to fix it. We are trying to be a vessel in terms of saying, hey, we have people that have licensing, that have the correct documents. Here they are. If you would like to hire them. And also not trying to take food out of anybody else's mouth. Do you hear what I mean?
But do you then regulate so those who come through you, that they would get a minimum wage, for instance? Are you those kind of partners?
Yes. We are advocating. Our biggest thing here is that we advocate for the interests of our members.
Sure.
So if you come to us, for instance, and you're saying, listen, I work for this and this a platform, and the hours that I used to get are not the same, or supervisors are not treating us the same, this is where we would then come in and speak on your behalf and try and understand where the issue is and how we can help fix that, for lack of a better
word. Did you say the apps are your partners? I don't know.
Industry partners. They are our partners because we work hand in hand. I mean, they're not our best friends.
I would kind of call it that, because, I mean, imagine, and this is not to, you know, I'm not pulling into a conversation where you need to have a difficult conversation, but we know the hospitality industry is the most unfair when it comes to, you know, how people get the kind of conditions.
I think COVID has put us in a difficult position. I don't think anybody expected the motorbike delivery industry to grow as exponentially as it has.
Mm.
So we are all just, in all honesty, trying to find our footing.
Mm.
You know, with all, I don't want to mention any names, but there's a few also coming up that will also need our help. So we don't turn anyone away. We are looking at growing as much as they are, you know. So when I say they are our industry partners, everybody's trying to find their footing.
I get it. That's a problem with regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Regulation usually comes after the fact. It comes after the innovation. So there's always innovation, and then we figure out how to regulate the innovation. The problem here is that if I can get away with not being regulated, I will be a grudgingly trying to work with your likes, because you're almost holding me accountable. And if I can get away with it, you know.
Why should I? Yeah, no, I understand. There'll always be, like you're saying, regulations come after, and there'll always be that certain few that will, do I really need this, or can I get away
like,
with it?
Like, why should I care about someone getting a license? Yes. I just want my stuff delivered.
The most important thing here is that if we can reach the masses, and especially the ones that are on the road, because that's what's important here, to make sure that everybody on the road, the fatalities that we've come across, you know, we've heard of, are growing, and that is a problem, you know. And if we are then all willing to work hand in hand to combat that, then I think we've won half the battle.
Here's a politically maybe correct or incorrect question. Most of, as the hospitality industry, most of some of the, or a good percentage is our foreign brothers. How do you deal with that licensing? Because you would find people that come into South Africa with a different license and they're just allowed on the road. Are you requiring them to go and redo their licenses, or what happens?
Yeah, is it a conversion thing at Tebogo sometimes? I mean, I know that if you come in from another country for cars,
yes, mm-hmm.
you can convert your license. How does it work here?
So with the motorbike, I stand to be corrected. I know that if you have the SADC license, you are allowed to basically, quote-unquote, work.
Continue, yeah.
Yes. So, but now, because of us trying to regulate things on the road and working with the government to do so, we are looking at ways for them to go through, for lack of a better word, testing before they get on the road, because we have different regulations when it comes to that. So that's what we're trying to look at in terms of putting them on the road and regulating them as well, so that they don't just come in and decide, I can just work.
If, you know, we know corruption in this country.
You guys are making me answer very, very
No, this is not your fault, because this is across the board. It's across the board. Us, we are, you know, us and corruption are like, a nail and a finger.
Failure.
So the concern I have is that you may find someone with a so-called learner's license, which could have just been an exchange of paper and money. Without having to ever read a single thing, understand anything. And that's, for me, the concern. When you onboard some of these members, do you take them, you said your process is vigorous, do you test them again to see if this person ever read a learner's license book?
So I know with certain platforms, they before they onboard you, you go through your criminal check. There's something called BECRA, and I think that's where you would be tested. Not obviously vigorously tested, but they would want to see the main points of the motorbike. Do you understand what happens on the road and this, that, and the other? So that's where I think that comes in. But I think for us, because we intend to be a vessel where motorbike delivery platforms and motorbike delivery drivers, as well as fleet owners, would come in and unite, and we would then foster the process, would come in. We would want you to then go through our own sort of, for lack of a better word, practice, so that we can see how you are on the road, because then that's our name on the line once we sign you up and once we send you to a motorbike delivery platform. So we can't send you out without knowing how you are on the road.
Here's from a fleet management point of view, and also you guys testing. I know DECRA would be via AA, but when you do your own testing, do you guys consider the conditions of the bike? Because I know with some of the apps, they would say it must not be older than 4 years. But I mean, when you order pizza,
that's very important for us, because then we can't have you as Bohisho on a weekly basis. Your bike is breaking down and it's got issues and there's this and there's that. So that also needs to be checked and tested.
Yeah, but what comes when you order pizza?
That's why we're here. That's why sometimes, we're trying to fix all of those issues one problem at a time.
Yeah, this is, you know, we sometimes make light of it, but it's a big concern, because if if I don't even know, which I've seen, mm-hmm. I literally have mm-hmm. seen, I don't, if the person doesn't know that, is it pass left?
Keep right.
Keep left, pass right.
Pass right, yes.
And when they're supposed to turn, and what happens when when they're supposed to turn, who's supposed to turn first with the circle?
Yes. Look, I can assure you that right now on our database, we have well over 500 that are trained by our industry partner that I am sure I speak from a point of knowing that they put them through vigorous training and they understand the rules of the road, K53 and all of that when it comes to motorbike training. So we're working with a database of people that are very, very well aware of the road. Mm. Unfortunately,
Are they getting employed? In other words, do your partners prefer these people that come through?
They do. In Gauteng, I can bravely say they do.
I'm going to take a quick break because, let's do that. And then when we come back, we'll also take some of your questions and then also give you information about how you can actually go through some tire yourself if you're interested, if you're somebody that perhaps is sitting at home, you know, you don't really know how to navigate some of these spaces. They may be here to assist you. Let me take a quick break. Bokhisit Bokon is also here. If you have any other questions, we'll start doing that also in a short while. If you have any other motoring questions.
Interview Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
All right, we have Managing Director at the South African Motorbike Transport Association, Teboho Chita, who is here with us because they are trying to assist those who want to get into the delivery service with the necessary skills so that you are well-equipped to be part of those people that we can call upon when we want to deliver something, because I'm sure you've seen them. It looks scary. Mm-hmm. It looks scary on the road. You had a question, Pukiso?
Oh, I think what we were saying... of the air is how also with Brad Eddy saying that you find that people that they don't have the skill to basically to manage their bike, and also at the same time I think it's the switch that we are doing from the SIDEC point of view, you know, how to switch the licenses. And at the same time I wanted to ask Deboho that what is the fatality rate and how are they hoping to achieve to reduce it?
Teboho?
Yes, I'm still here.
Mm, did you get the question from Pukiso?
Yes. I don't have a complete number or statistic for you, but I know that it's not above 20%. I stand corrected at the moment, but that is still quite high. What we're doing now, we had a road safety awareness campaign, motorbike road safety awareness campaign, and we worked with an industry partner that aims to and strives to raise awareness on such issues. We're also trying to then move around into areas where we know the motorbike industry is on the rise and raise awareness in terms of motorbike safety and speaking on that.
Would electrical bikes form part of the people that you train? I mean, right now we're getting a lot of electrical bikes.
And yes, we are working with, well, we're speaking to a company in Cape Town that has introduced electric bikes there, and some of them have also been introduced in another motorbike delivery. I don't want to name names that has also been used in a motorbike delivery platform here in Gauteng, and it's doing quite well. And like I said, the people that have been onboarded as members on our platform are driving electric bikes. I don't think, though, if I can add, the issue here is electric or petrol-based, for lack of a better word. I do think, like we've been speaking, it's definitely a training issue. So if we can combat that and find a way to regulate as quickly as possible, then I think the battle will be half won.
When you say regulate, what would you like to see happen?
Definitely the correct training. I do think we've been a bit lax, and that's speaking from a point of view where this has taken it's spread like wildfire in motorbike industry, and we haven't been able to really figure out where we put it or what we box it in. But now that we see as a country, as a government, that it's here to stay, there needs to be certain rules and regulations that apply to it. Mm. We cannot allow people to just move with a learner's license, for instance. There needs to be a lot more that's done than just saying, this is what they do, let them go. You know, I don't want to step on any toes as I'm saying this, but this is why SAMTA is here, and this is what SAMTA is trying to do, among other things.
So the change would be required, would it be from changing the rules when you are trying to get into e-hailing and apps for delivery?
Yes.
Or would
definitely from all aspects, if I'm being honest, Bokisho, it would have to come from the platforms where the motorbike delivery drivers apply and work. It would have to come from the government and how they issue a learner's license and what the rules are there for once you have the learner's license. I mean, with a car, you know that, yes, I can drive, but to a certain distance, and there's certain things that I can't do. And I know that I'll get into trouble if I'm stopped by a traffic cop. So I won't get away with a warning, so to speak. So I think as SAMTA, we are working hand in hand, we're aiming to work hand in hand with each of these industries to try and regulate as much as possible. I know I'm using that word beyond necessity, but for lack of a better explanation, regulation is important.
Yeah, some Sipo here on X is saying, I've also seen that those tires, those bold tires on the on the bikes, should not be on the road. It really is a concern for me. What is being done about the quality of the bike itself?
So I know that when we onboard, these are the things that we look for. And you see, as much as I can't speak on everybody else, please try and understand that not everyone is under SAMTA.
Yeah, of course.
We would love for everybody to be under SAMTA, but certain drivers don't want to be under an association that will then tell them, guys, this is how you need to function, this is what we expect of you. So some of them will fall by the wayside. But for the most part, we're making sure that each and every driver is adhering to every single rule that we have then agreed on and spoken on in terms of the bike being up to standard as well as the licensing.
I'm increasingly just I'm not sure, you know, how I feel about
it. I understand, but it is, I mean, for example, taxis didn't start out being the best thing that was ever invented. They still have their own issues as we speak. But there is a taxi association that strives to do better, to work with, not against. You know, there's a lot of associations that come up with the aim to fix and not destroy. So that is also something that we are trying to do. It has gotten out of hand. It has gotten very far. There's a lot of motorbike delivery drivers on the road. And there's a lot of things that people have seen. That's not something that I can deny. I've also had my experiences, and maybe that has also been a driving force behind why SAMTA has come about.
Well, thank you. I don't know if you've got anything else
to
ask.
No, I'm good.
How do people get hold of you, those who may be interested in being a member of yours?
Okay, so you can definitely get a hold of us on our website, www.samta.africa. All our details, including social media, is on that. And you can sign up as a member. It takes you directly through the entire process. And we welcome anyone and everyone that is interested and wants to be within the motorbike delivery space.
Thembogo Chetsa, thank you so much for your time. Managing Director at the South African Motorbike Transport Association, that's SAMTA. So if you want to connect with them, do that, and they may help you navigate the space, because I think, yeah, it's a good service. You know, hopefully a lot of people will go this route rather than just going directly to starting on this journey, and unfortunately maybe just stumbling upon all sorts of problems that we've just discussed, you know.
I think they would need to have more conversations with their partners, because the partners are, from the app point of view, all they want is to make money also.
Yeah.
So they will onboard people that, you know, just have just the license and the bike. And then we continue.
There's also a program by the Department of Transport in Gauteng, if I stand to be corrected, that also supports entrepreneurs and young people who want to go into this. What is it called, by the way? Do you remember what it's called?
No.
Yes, it is a program that I think has been around for a while. It's not new, but the promotions are still quite active at the moment. They go out there, and you don't have to have a learner's or anything at all. You just come in, sign up, and they will support you through the journey. I just want to get the name of the program for a minute.
So they'll help you start up the whole business.
You being an independent contractor. Yeah. In fact, I don't even know if they assist you with the bike, but they really do help you get going. So I think all you have to have, not even a matric, I think it's grade 10.
Yeah. Well, look, if from a... to have to ride a bike, as long as you're over the age of 16, you can do a learner's. And at the same time, you have a lot of rental companies so that have popped up because the industry is growing, obviously. So you get
So to rent the bike,
you can rent the bike, and obviously you're paying the company a commission fee, the same way as, you know, how an Uber fleet or people who buy vehicles and they get a driver who's paying a fee every weekly, paying a fee to the owner of the vehicle. So it's the same setup. So you can get people that will rent you a bike as long as you have a learner's. So that is some of the hurdles that they would have to go through, because at the end of the day is...
It's called Last Mile. That Last Mile program. It's run by the Department of Gauteng Transport, and they literally start you from zero.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to have a learner's or anything, just your ID and I think the grade 10.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if it's a requirement. But over 18, of course, you have your license. No, your ID.
Yeah.
And then you sign up, and
they just assist you with the license.
With everything. Yeah. With on their terms, with their costs, and as far as I can remember, even up to the bike itself.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I think, a big thing.
Yeah, no, so that's a good initiative. Because I view these jobs as vocational jobs. This is something that students can do when they're on holiday and earn money.
So I'm going to, it is SAMTA, S-A-M-T-A, if you want to understand what you can gain from them. But also it is, I said, go to the Department of Gauteng. It's Gauteng's Transport Department. If you go to the website, gauteng.gov.za, go there, and you can, Last Mile is the name of the program. Enroll there if you like. And, you know, I had a conversation with them recently, and they were saying, people don't join or sign up because they think it's too good to be true. And generally what ends up happening is that it's only when they see a peer on a brand new bike do they think, oh, okay, I want to come. But they think they can join when they see someone on the bike. They don't understand you must go through the entire process from the beginning. But, you know, you have to stick it out.
But maybe the government is not doing a good job in terms of marketing.
Correct.
Yeah, I think if they put it out there, there's a
last
lot
mile.
Of,
last mile, guys, last mile. Yeah, people can benefit. Yeah. But apparently people think it's too good to be true. And so, you know, they don't really come on board because they don't believe that it's something that can help them. So if you can go to the website, the Gauteng, gauteng.gov.za website, go to the Department of Transport in Gauteng. Last mile is what you're looking for. When we come back, we ask your questions. We take your questions. Bogiso is here. Any questions related to your car problems, motorbike problems? What other problems? Motorbike. So now we've established motorbike could be anything, almost like a cycling thing. all the way to a motorbike. You can call him those problems. Sohiso is also here to answer those questions.
Point of View. Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Bogiso Dibokwana is here, and we are discussing cars, all your car problems, 086-000-0959. You can also send us voice notes as well, 063-688-0959. Send us an X, but it's always nice hearing from you directly from your lips. And also if you can maybe call so that we can ask you questions if we're not clear about something. Okay, so what's a podium?
So a podium, you know how... basically, a podium is it's a paper that has information when you're getting financed. It's very, very important that you ask your dealer or your F&I, whoever you're financing the vehicle from, to give you your podium.
Wait, okay. This is if you're buying a car.
Yes.
And you get it. When do you get that podium, or when do you ask for the podium?
So, obviously, what happens is that when you apply for a vehicle is that the dealer will send out the application to...
The bank.
The banks.
Or banks.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the banks will come back and the dealer will tell you that we have negotiated the best on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that is not true. So what you do
sometimes
is...
Sometimes they have a relationship with that bank, yes, and they just went to that one bank.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because why? The biggest problem there is that they get a commission.
This is what I was going to say.
Yeah. So the bank will pay them a certain amount that they are getting the deal from the dealer.
Mm-hmm.
So what you should do is that once you once a dealer says to you, yes,
I got you a deal. And this is the best deal.
Mm-hmm. You say, no, please provide me with a podium.
As in the deal. Provide yes. me with what the offer is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the podium, it's a piece of paper that will detail, one,
what the offer is.
What is the offer?
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle, basically price without VET, including VET. Also the extras on the vehicle. Basically, you got cars that have extras, then they have to load on the financing. So the podium will supply also that.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll tell you that you have balloon, no balloon. It'll tell you the interest rate. So once you have a podium, you can negotiate to say, no, this is the interest rate I don't want. It's not a good deal. Can I see all the other deals that the other banks have sent? Mm. Because that when you have that, you have an upper hand.
Because they can say that's the best deal we've got.
Yeah.
But you don't have proof it's the best deal you've got.
The podium will also help you with that. Because also it can help you negotiate because the bank will give
but
the deal.
But you're no longer negotiating. It's in that person's hands. In other words, they're the ones. You still rely on them. Or what's your thought on that?
Remember, you haven't signed.
Mm-hmm.
All you did is to put in an application. So mm-hmm. the application has come back and say you got approval.
Mm-hmm.
And your F&I will say, look, or your salesperson will say, look, X Bank is offering us, the best is offering us a prime rate of 9. And this is your installment.
Mm.
So what people do, they rush quickly to sign off because the installment is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have requested for a podium, you are in a position to say, look, the podium is saying you guys are getting maybe a commission of 20,000.
Oh, does the podium stipulate that?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
So the bank pays the dealer.
Yes.
For the dealer giving them that
business,
deal.
Yeah.
Yes. So you'll also be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also a part of negotiation. Mm-hmm. You can say to the but you guys are getting 20,000 out of this. Why not put a percentage of this money into a deposit because I'm giving you the deal. Why do you want to make money twice? Because already the car that you're buying, there's a markup on it.
Mm.
So once you have a podium, you have power to negotiate. You can negotiate the interest rate. You can you can negotiate what type of deal you want before signing.
How often does that happen? People don't know.
People don't know. Information is power.
So okay. What's reasonable? If you were given a podium, and as you said, you know, it gives you room to negotiate.
Yeah.
What are the things to look out for that you can definitely negotiate on? And what's reasonable? I mean, if you had to guide somebody, what's just like out of line? Just, you know, and what is reasonable to negotiate?
Well, remember, once you have an approval, approval, you can take it to any dealer. If they have a VW Golf 7.5 for 350,000, they're not giving me a good rate, I can go and look for the same
because
car.
Because it's still within the dealer's interest to work with you, to negotiate better for you.
Yes. But now they try and make it feel that this is the best deal that you can get.
Of course, of course.
But once you have approval from the bank, you can change it to any dealer. You can decide to take the approval to Martin and Jonker, whatever, and then buy a car there because they'll be either offering you a good interest rate. They can go and negotiate with the bank that, look, the client is saying this is what he's willing to prepare to pay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you go into purchasing a car, you know that, look, I'm willing to spend 8,000 rand. I don't want to go beyond that because going beyond that, I want to include with the insurance. So you need to negotiate a deal that is very comfortable for you. So you can basically sweeten the deal for yourself. It's either you can demand that, look, put in a tent that I don't have to pay for, put in mud flaps, put in a tow bar, because standard cars don't come with tow bars. Those are extras. So you can negotiate and say, look, put in this and this and this, I'm taking the deal. If you don't do that, I'm not taking the deal. You must remember, they are in the business of selling cars.
Yes.
They want to make sure that you...
The car is gone.
Yes.
When you have purchased the car, and say, for instance, you are migrating. Let's just say you're one of those people that likes to put all your eggs in one basket, and you're migrating your own personal bank. And you want to bring in... this particular deal to your own portfolio in the one bank. Advisable or not?
It's advisable because you have a relationship with your bank. If I'm understanding you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And will it be easy to then change those terms when you bring it onto your new account or your current account?
Well, look, once you basically changing...
The finance agreement.
Remember, when you have a podium, you haven't signed.
No, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Once you've done all of that, and now you've decided, or you think, you know what, it's best for me to get all my eggs in this particular bank.
Yes.
Is it easy? Is it advisable? Or there are many penalties when you move while it's still under finance?
No, it's almost impossible to do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's almost impossible to do it. Yeah.
Really?
Because you need to pick the bank before you sign.
So, got you. Yeah. So once the deal is done.
Once the deal is done.
You can't move it. Like a cell phone contract.
No.
Really?
No, you can't move it. Because you owe that bank. You must remember, they gave you money to do that.
But wouldn't the new bank pay out the other bank and to give you a new debt?
It's No. That happens when most of the time when you're selling for settlement type of deal. So they know that somebody else is going to take the debt, not for you to just switch banks.
So you wouldn't be able to switch banks?
No.
Interesting.
It's best, the best position you would have is that if you are a prime or you have a private banker, before you purchase, contact your private banker and say, look, there's an approval that I've got with this dealer, and then this is my bank. I've been with you guys for this long. You cannot be giving me 8 plus 10. Oh, I need a better rate. Then they need to negotiate.
And then come to the party in that way.
Yes. So now you're putting your eggs in one basket. So your bank that you've been with needs to negotiate and needs to make you happy, because you can always tell them that, look, you know what? You guys are not have interest for me. So let me move to the Blue Bank, because the Blue Bank is willing to give me this and this and this. And then if I move all my business and my personal account, they'll give me more rate.
All right, let's take those calls, 086-000-00959. We can also look at those voice notes on 063-688-0959 with all your questions in relation to your car problems, motoring problems. And here is a question from someone who has a Kia Picanto 2009, who says, I don't actually have a problem that I think I can stipulate, except that when I stop my car, it usually feels hot, for the engine feels hot for quite some time afterwards. Is that a sign for something that is going wrong?
Well, look, the Kia Picanto, depending on the options that the person took, mm-hmm. you can get that car without aircon. So all the heat that is generating from the engine will come in through into the engine.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So a bit of heat will come through into your basically inside the car, because the vehicle does not have a con. So you're relying on basically the air from the outside to come in. So on a hot day, you will feel hot air coming in.
Hmm. All right. This one says, I have a BMW 3 Series 2018. I've noticed that my tires are wearing out quicker than they used to.
Oh, quicker than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, tires, you need to take care of them. It'll also depend on brand. If 2018 3 Series, that'll be a G Series, it's either they have Pirellis or Bridgestone run flat tires. It's very important that you do wheel alignment and wheel balancing every 5,000 Ks, and which is very rare on that vehicle that you would have same size of tires front and back. So you have what we call wide and narrows. So the rear tires would be a bit bigger and the front ones will be a bit smaller, so you can't switch them around. You don't have that option. So the best is that do wheel alignment and wheel balancing every 5,000 Ks, because the biggest problem that you find on those type of vehicles is your rear tires will start wearing from the inside because of camber caster. That is something that can be adjusted by your wheel alignment place.
Okay. This person says, I've got 2020, this is quite new, 2020 turbocharge problems with my VW Tiguan. I've taken it back many, many times, but it doesn't seem to be sorted out.
Yeah, there is a bit of an issue on the Tiguans.
Okay.
In terms of power and turbo. And the other thing, I think it was overheating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of those problems, especially when the mileage reaches around 150,000 Ks. The turbo kind of gives a bit of an issue. Look for a turbo place, because I know at VW that turbo is very expensive. I think it's more than 40,000. So look for Turbo Works. They can assist you with that turbo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This gentleman says, it's Dumi, says on X, says, I've got a 2011 model Turbo Q5 and I have an excess oil consumption problem. It's been something that the dealership is not able to deal with.
If the car still has power, it's not your turbo. It's that will be Volstam seals. So your cylinder head needs to be reworked, because what happens is that because of the age, the vehicle's Volstam seals dry up. They're made out of rubber. So you'll notice that when you maybe at the stop street or at a traffic light, the car smokes just a bit. So as soon as you move, then stops doing it. But you get a very huge amount of oil consumption. Every maybe 1,000 Ks, you need to top up with 1 liter. Those are signs that your Volstam seals are gone.
Hmm. Okay. This person is Silo, who says, I have an ABS light problems on my Volvo C70. Doesn't say the age.
Yeah, Volvo C70, it's a bit older, because we, at Volvo now, we are at the 90 and the 30 and the 40. The C70, I think it is a station wagon. So, yeah, it's an SUV, yeah, station wagon. So that will need to put on diagnosis. Could be ABS. It also can be ABS sensors. So an electronic diagnosis system should be able to tell us what is the issue. But that's something very easy to sort out. Just get the car diagnosed. ABS pump or the ABS sensors.
Lerato says, I am driving a Kia Sportage and I've been plagued with the engine issues as well as problems with repeated stalling. Also is not saying what age is a Sportage.
Yeah, and not telling us is it diesel or petrol.
Oh.
Yeah, we need a bit of more information.
What's the difference there?
Well, stalling, obviously, something is wrong. It's either on the throttle body or on the pedal, because, again, it will depend if it's a diesel or petrol. A petrol engine will use, a throttle body that basically regulates your idling when you stop at a stop street. Stalling basically means the car is switching off all the time.
Yes. So what would the diesel or the petrol, how would that be?
The difference. So the difference would be that a petrol one will use a throttle body. The diesels, which are mostly commonly sold in South Africa, it's either an idle sensor or the pedal. The pedal basically on those vehicles is the one that is regulating the idling.
Okay. All right, Peter is saying my 2015 Ford Ranger XLT 3.2.
Yeah, it's a V6.
Okay, so you know what that is. I have no idea. Is going into limp mode on hot days. Mm. You look like you know what they're talking about. What's going on there?
Those vehicles, they have an overheating issue.
Okay.
Once that starts to happen, I would say get somebody to check your cams, because they are very notorious of breaking the cams in half. So limp mode, basically the electronics is trying to protect the engine. Something is wrong on the engine when it does that.
What did you say? That usually they have a heating problem, you said?
So no, not entirely a heating problem. Mm-hmm. What happens is that when the vehicle goes into limp mode, the electronics is trying to protect the engine. Something is wrong on the engine. They are very notorious of breaking the cam.
Okay.
Yeah. So because of the cam, it would generate a bit of heat.
Okay.
So now the vehicle is saying something is wrong.
Yeah.
The car needs to stop.
So that's why it slows down.
Yes.
What is the problem?
The cams.
Okay.
Yeah. So the cams, basically, they're rotating all the time when the mm-hmm. car is moving. So because of the cams are now generating heat on the cam followers.
Mm.
So the electronics of the vehicle is saying something is wrong on the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It sends a message to the computer box. That
say slow it down.
Slow it down. So I would get somebody to check those first.
Okay. Mercedes C-Class. Doesn't say the age, says I can feel excessive vibration in the car while I'm driving.
Excessive vibration?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to know which C-Class is it, because, I mean, we have so many generations of the C-Class.
Okay.
I would say maybe it's the older C-Class. Mm-hmm. They are very notorious on engine mountings, especially when they get old. The 203 and the 204s. The ones with the big badges,
mm-hmm.
those are the 204.
Mm-hmm.
So once the engine mountings gets worn out, you will feel the whole car vibrating. So
the engine mounting?
Yes, the engine mountings.
So what would you do there?
You have to replace them. There's on the C-Class, you have basically two of them on either side. So replace those two, you're good to go.
Okay, I think we've got time for one last one, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it's taking a long time to come through. Okay, quickly, let's try and see. It's a BMW. It's a BMW engine problem. And this is someone who says, my 2009 7 Series. Mm. Yes. has been really good to me, except that I have a problem with the gearbox.
Yeah, no. I can guarantee you that car has more than 150Ks.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a ZF box in those vehicles, mm-hmm. Depending which 7 Series is it.
Okay.
But those are good cars to keep. I would say take the car to ZF and have the gearbox repaired. It's not going to be cheap. I can tell you that much.
I'm sure.
It's not going to be cheap. It's anything over 62,000.
The gearbox.
Yeah.
Alone.
It's a 7 Series. Yeah. That is the pinnacle of BMW.
How much did you say? About 60,000.
62,000.
But you would say fix it.
It's a 7 Series. I mean, a 7 Series, those are the best to drive. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what we need to remember, need to know is that everything that you get in a Rolls Royce, it's passed down to the 7 Series. So you're practically buying a Rolls Royce in a cheaper version. Yeah. Everything that you get in a Rolls Royce, it's in a 7 Series.
Really?
Because you remember, the Rolls Royce is made by BMW.
Did you know that anything that the Rolls Royce has, 7 Series has?
It's the same with the Porsches. I mean, your Porsche Cayenne, some of the parts are coming from your VW Tiguans and that, and Touareg.
Really?
Yeah. A Porsche is a VW.
I don't know whether to be happy or sad for the VW driver or the Porsche driver. Like, I'm not sure who to be happy or sad for.
Look, once you get into that space that you don't really want to let go of the Porsche, but you can't really afford it anymore.
You must go to VW.
Just go to VW and buy the part. This is the same part number, but that Porsche costs this much.
Are you being for real?
Yeah.
Really?
Just do the homework, guys.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but Rolls Royce, buy a 7 Series 3-liter diesel, you're good to go.
Professor, always lovely having you, and what an insightful conversation. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you so much. Remember, mm-hmm. driving is a skill, not a privilege.
Thanks, guys. We'll be back tomorrow.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.